from his palatial estates right in the heart of downtown Los Angeles. Sweep the leg, Andrew. It's time to speak some English with Andrew English.
You're the best around. I'm never, never gonna keep you down.
Yeah, something like that. Anyway,
see, Stan Bush, man.
It was a good
jam. Get a body bag, Johnny. Yeah.
I don't think it's Stan Bush, unfortunately. It would be great if he had written both that and.
Oh, no, you're right. It's Joe Esposito.
Yes, yes.
It is Joe Esposito.
Well played, sir.
And the funny thing is, that song never made it onto a legitimate album outside of the Karate Kid soundtrack.
Are you saying that the Karate Kid soundtrack isn't a legitimate album?
Yeah, I'm saying that.
Fair enough. Well, I'm glad you had that little tidbit of information, Wes. You truly are the best.
That's correct.
Welcome, everybody, to another exciting edition of Speaking English. As always, I'm here with my co-commentators, Wes and Carl.
You know, we're What's not happening really commentating. We're sort of opining.
We make comments.
My co-opiner.
Carl, that was a comment.
No, but I guess that's true. But is a comment commenter generally someone who's doing it live?
Carl, I believe he's someone that makes comments.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, fair. You're right.
This is commentary.
You're right.
Yeah.
All right. Now that we've finished up with that thrilling semantic argument, let's jump right into all of the exciting things we've got to discuss this week. We're going to begin with a breakdown of the UEFA Champions League quarterfinals. We're going to talk about predictions for the NHL playoffs, which just started yesterday. And then we have a few little tidbits on Formula One and the lead up to the race in China this weekend. So let's jump right into it, guys. This week we saw the second leg fixtures in the Champions League quarterfinals. And after everything is said and done, we've got, Arsenal having beaten Villarreal, Manchester United having gotten past Porto somehow to make it to the semifinals. Liverpool and Chelsea had a thrilling 4-4 game that we're going to have to chat a little bit about. And then there was the Barcelona-Bayern game, which was effectively never really in depth. Yeah, well, needless to say.
I mean,
go ahead, Carl.
I guess it's everything that I kind of, you know, was supposed to happen this week pretty much happened. I mean, I guess though the Liverpool-Chelsea match was much more interesting than what it makes it sound like, it's still ultimately everything that was supposed to happened. It was pretty uneventful.
No, that's really true. I mean, if you had been forced to make predictions after the first round of games, the only one that you could have conceivably said was realistically in doubt was the Man U Porto game, and only because Porto had the two away goals. And it's not like Man U went out and utterly dominated Porto this week. They won 1-0 on the back of a really, truly stunning goal from Ronaldo. I hate Cristiano Ronaldo with a passion, but he's so damn much fun to watch sometimes, especially when he's 40 yards from the goal and he takes one touch and then just rockets the ball upper 90. That's kind of hard to argue with, I'm not going to lie. And Arsenal-Villarreal, I don't know. Arsenal had a slight advantage with their away goal going into the second leg, but then the fact that Marco Senna and Ariel Ibigaza weren't available for Villarreal, I think, really tanked them. But Arsenal really put together a very solid attacking performance. Do you think that they're starting to find a little bit of consistency late in the season now that they're getting a few people back healthy? Do you think that they're honestly going to be able to challenge Man U in the next round?
I think they will. I think that they're it hurts certainly that Arshavin's not going to be eligible for Champions League play, considering how good he's been since they finally brought him over. I don't know. I feel like, for whatever reason, I feel like this team can give Manchester United trouble. And I don't have a lot to quantify that, just that Alex Song has proven to be a very good partner in the middle of the park to Cesc Fabregas, who's healthy. They've got, I believe, Walcott is either back or almost back.
He's back.
No, Walcott is back. He scored a very, very nifty little chip yesterday, actually.
I mean, the only thing that the only real downer is in typical Arsenal fashion, William Gallus is gone for the year following, I believe it was a leg injury of some sort, maybe a knee problem, but he's toast.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead, Carl.
I think that the thing for Arsenal is that all the other teams in Champions League are fairly weak, all things considered. I mean, Barcelona could potentially be good, but I mean, I looked the other day. I'd say the most difficult team they played in the Champions League thus far is either Bayern or Lyon, and then the best team in their league, other than them, I mean, Valencia's what got money trouble. Real, I mean, Liverpool annihilated Real. So I mean, who have they beaten? I mean, they haven't done anything to show me that they're actually capable of playing with an English team. And then,
well, and Bayern, to carry your point further, Bayern has struggled very much lately, including, I believe Hamburg thrashed.
No, it was Wolfsburg, actually.
Wolfsburg. I knew it was one of the Bergs, and I knew it was either Ham or Wolf.
Yeah, so they got lucky there. And then Man U, we talked last time all about how weak they are through the midfield. And then this is Chelsea is looking good under Hiddink, and they're my personal favorite for the Champions League, but they're not a perfect team. They're not one of the Mourinho teams that would only lose to a bullshit, like, not real Liverpool goal or something. I mean, this team is not as strong as it used to be, so I think it's kind of a crapshoot.
Yeah, it's actually going to be it has a lot of drama. Like you're saying, Czech right now is just brutal. And if Chelsea hadn't let Cudicini walk, then they'd probably be very seriously looking at using the backup. Barca, I'm bullish on Barcelona. I think that they're a good team. I don't think it's necessarily their fault that they haven't played anybody, but you're completely right in saying that it's a little bit difficult to hand them the trophy right now, considering their resume. I think that Liverpool's out, I meant to say. I think that Manchester United is good, and they're doing what it takes, but this is still a team that has a problem with bodies in the middle of the park and a whole lot of other things to be playing for right now. And I think Arsenal is the biggest X factor in the bunch. I could see they just vary so much from game to game. I could see Arsenal going out and beating any team in the field, and I could see Arsenal going out and getting blown out by any team in the field.
Yeah, that's exactly what I think.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I think that Arsenal continues to struggle with what they've struggled with all of this season and last season, which is just consistently. Obviously, on their day, they are an incredibly capable attacking team. They pass the ball very effectively, put together a lot of really fluid movements. And when Adebayor and Van Persie are healthy and playing well, they're as good as any set of strikers in the Premiership.
Yeah.
And right now, they are playing very well. The question is whether or not they're going to be able to sustain that, and whether or not this team, which kind of has a reputation in big part, I think, because of their age. I mean, they're all fairly young, relatively speaking, of crumbling under the pressure. And I think that against a team like Manchester United, I think they actually have a really legitimate shot of going through against Man U. I mean, we saw what Liverpool was able to do against Man U in the league. And even though they have been winning recently, Man U have been scraping wins. I mean, they won 4-3, was it, against Aston Villa? They won 2-1 just this past weekend against, I can't even remember what crappy team it was this time around. And then the draw and the 1-0 win against Porto. I mean, these are not convincing results. Right now, I have to think that Arsenal, on the back of recent performances, is actually looking like the better team than Manchester United, which you haven't been able to say for most of the season.
And we've talked about this before, but Arsenal's always been funny in that they play so much better against the good teams than they do against the crappy teams. And they have it's Wenger's just obstinate refusal to play dirty soccer. And you get against the lousy teams, then Arsenal really struggles. But Manchester United is going to try and carry the ball, and they're going to try and string passes together, and they're going to try and you know, work the combinations and the triangles and all of that, you know, non-direct tactics. And ironically, yep. that's what Arsenal is best suited to handle, as opposed to just, you know, lumping it up the field and letting somebody chase it all day.
I honestly think that you could throw Arsenal into Serie A or into La Liga, and they would be top one or two team consistently over the past couple of years because they are such a technical team. But I feel like the teams that they have to deal with in the bottom half of the Premiership that just go out and play a gritty game and try and grind out a 0-0 or 1-0 result, they really just can't handle. But I think you're absolutely right. I mean, especially right now, Man U doesn't have any of that grit. I mean, when you're going up against a midfield that's comprised of Michael Carrick and Anderson or Michael Carrick and Ryan Giggs, you know, it's not too much to ask to bowl them over, and you don't have to worry about too many crunching tackles and things like this coming in.
It's a shame. It's a shame Owen Hargreaves isn't going to be a factor.
He never yeah. will be.
Nope. It's funny how that works out.
You know what the great thing about it is his name. He's got an Owen in his name.
Yeah, it's a bad soccer move to be named Owen in a
quarterback. His parents really should have considered that. Maybe it's time for a change. Who knows?
How about the other game? How about the other part of the bracket? It's, please, Drew.
Sorry, with Barcelona and Chelsea, I really think it's going to be an incredibly interesting matchup. As I can't remember which of you was saying it just moments ago, I think Carl perhaps, that Hiddink has done a great job. I mean, Chelsea is consistently winning games right now. They're playing very smart attacking football. The fact that they gave up 4 goals against Liverpool the other day does not necessarily bode exceptionally well for them, but they seem like they keep finding ways to win. And I have a feeling that we're not going to see that much in the way of defense in the Barcelona-Chelsea matchup.
You just had the feeling that it wasn't going to be as simple as Chelsea protecting a 3-1 lead. And I think that by introducing a second striker as quickly as he did, rather than waiting and rather than, you know, Chelsea, they definitely gave up the momentum with those 2 early goals, but they never gave up the lead. And I think that allowed mm-hmm. them to, you know, it allowed them to collect themselves. And I just think that was a huge factor. And I think that Hiddink deserves all the credit in the world. And Anelka factored into, you know, quite a bit of Chelsea's scoring after that point. And it's pretty hard to argue yeah. against that substitutions being a major turning point.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just was very impressed with Chelsea all the way around because I felt going into the first fixture that Liverpool was playing the best soccer yeah. in the world. And Chelsea beat them. And then Liverpool collected themselves, came back, and assaulted Chelsea with the best soccer in the world for the first half. But then Chelsea collected themselves, and they went out and beat them. And the reason they're my favorite is just because they beat who I think still is potentially the best, playing yeah. the best in the
well,
world.
Well, what do you think? I mean, I would agree with you, except for Peter Cech just has lately looked so bad. And the 4-goal explosion aside, Chelsea is still a team that relies in large part on its defense. And a lot of that has been, you know, due to their goalkeeping, and it's pretty cliched at this point. It's on any number of sites all around the interweb, but it's really ever since he fractured his skull, Cech has been just not bad, but degrading. He's just not been the same. He hasn't had that aura about him that really, you know, when Mourinho mm-hmm. was winning and when mm-hmm. Chelsea was in their initial phase of success, a big piece of that was you weren't going to beat Peter Cech.
I agree with that. I guess I just think that the other teams have more weaknesses.
Yeah, well, I agree with you, but that's just potentially crippling.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point.
Here's the way I look at it. First off, I think you're absolutely right about that. I think that Cech lost a fair amount of confidence once he got injured, and he's never fully regained it. And he can go out some days and play like he's still one of the best goalies in the world, but a lot of times he just looks ordinary. And, I mean, you saw that the other day. Fabio Aurelio's goal, not that it wasn't a very well-placed free kick, but Cech should have really been on top of that. I mean, he was completely on the opposite side of the net. He wasn't covering it at all, and he just allowed that ball to sneak right past him. I think, though, that the fact that Liverpool scored four goals against Chelsea may have something to do with the fact that Chelsea did not have a first-choice defense out there. I mean, they did not have John Terry. And I think that when that team has John Terry and Ricardo Carvalho as their two center backs, they have maybe the best pairing of center backs in the world. They're both incredibly effective players. Terry's a little bit more physical, whereas Carvalho tends to play much smarter, but they work very, very well together. And I don't think you see sort of the same level of cohesiveness when you've got Alex or Ivanovic standing in at center back. So,
well, I mean, that's true. Alex had notable mistakes in both games.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's obviously he brings things to the table. You saw the free kick that he scored, which was pretty stunning. Quite honestly, the last goal that Dirk Kuyt scored, he should not have been able to break between two defenders to get on the end of that ball. It's not that it wasn't a good cross, not that it wasn't a good header, but you would expect Chelsea's defense to clean that up. And I think that when Terry and Carvalho are both in the mix, that's the sort of thing that will get cut out. And that's the sort of goal that won't get scored against them.
Andrew, I expect Dirk Kuyt to score whatever the cost.
Oh, I know you do, Wes. We've had this conversation. If I wasn't worried about beating the living crap out of you, then we might get into the conversation. I just don't think I have the constitution for it right now. But I mean, I think that Chelsea's going to find themselves very challenged. Barcelona has I think it's hard to argue that Barcelona has the best attack, or at least one of the top two or three attacking lineups in the world. And I mean, Bayern had not played badly throughout the course of Champions League. Obviously, they'd had a very, very poor game against Wolfsburg before that 4-0 drubbing by Barcelona. But they hadn't been playing terribly. And Barcelona could have easily scored 7 or 8 goals in that first game. They really took their feet off the gas after they scored 4 and after the half. But they could have easily scored 7 or 8 goals just on the back of the chances that they had, and you got the sense that they weren't even trying that hard after they were up 4-0. So I think it's going to be a really interesting matchup. I think that there's definitely going to be a lot of pressure on Chelsea, but so far Hiddink seems to really have a handle on how to make this team work, and I'm really not going to start questioning him right now. I'm very curious to see what's going to happen when these two guys meet up.
I agree.
Do you guys have anything else really to add on Champions League?
Nope.
All right.
I don't.
Well, let's move right along then. And Wes, as a resident hockey expert, I know that you have some very strong opinions on how the playoffs are going to shape up. So why don't you give us a little insight into who you expect to make it through the first round matchups and who you think might have a chance to take it all this year.
All right. So you're going to put me on the spot like that, huh?
I'm doing that too.
Damn,
I'm playing
straight.
It that way.
Say what, Mr. Carl?
Damn straight.
Well, I'm gonna start in the Eastern Conference, because unlike years past, I think that this year really the best hockey is out east. That's where the real meat and potatoes are. That's where you gotta go.
Weird to see that, because I don't feel like that's happened in ages.
It hasn't, but the biggest drivers have been Pittsburgh and Washington picking high for so many years, and all of a sudden you've got you know, Pittsburgh is one of the best young teams in the league. Washington is an excellent squad. Philadelphia had some investments that have paid off. You know, Carolina has kind of rounded back into form, and even New Jersey has had a bit of a second win. So it's a good little conference. So I guess the easiest thing to do is just to kind of walk through the series, and I'll dispense a bit of wisdom, and gentlemen, feel free to chime in. And we've got The one seed, I think, in the Eastern Conference is my favorite out of the conference. I feel like the Boston Bruins are they're the best team in the East. They are
See, it really surprises me to see them as number one. I guess the last time I was really following hockey, they were so mediocre. I don't know. I just surprised.
That's because they still had Joe Thornton on their team. Come on.
And the irony is, as much as they got killed for making the Thornton trade, and it, you know, it wasn't on the surface a particularly good trade. And I'm not saying that the Thornton trade is why they're good now, but the moves that they made immediately after that in picking up Marco Sturm and drafting Milan Lukic, they found, you know, Patrice Bergeron, David Krejci, they picked up Mark Savard. Like, the series of moves they made immediately after shifting Joe Thornton really have allowed this young team to, you know, well, young except for Tim Thomas, who's just improbable. But it's just been a fantastic little story. You know, one nut Phil Kessel scores a ton of goals, and you know, bless his heart, he's got one testicle. But
you know,
less weight.
Yes, right,
he's more aerodynamic. and I feel like they're the biggest threat in that they've got everything that you need to succeed. I feel like Mark Savard is. It deserves to be mentioned alongside the likes of Joe Thornton and Sidney Crosby when you're talking about the game's best playmakers.
He's been phenomenal this season.
Been phenomenal ever since he got to Boston. I mean, the only reason we don't sing his praises all the time is because he was a huge douchebag in Calgary.
Yeah.
And he was such a little piece of crap that everybody kind of gave up on him, and he's shown that he's not the worst two-way player in the world. It's certainly not his stock and trade, but he'll get you some goals, and this is a Bruins team that can bang. They've got, you know, Krejci's a big body. They've got Zdeno Chara, Dennis Weidman. You know, they can hit you. They've got they've got scorers and Kessel. Yeah, Lukic will drop the gloves.
Yep.
And they're just an exceptionally balanced lineup, whereas, you know, and I feel like the 2-2 score at the moment, notwithstanding, I feel like Montreal kind of backed into the playoffs. They've been up and down all year. Carey Price has been pretty much lousy since the end of last season. And I just I Alexei Kovalev disappeared. You know, I guess it wasn't a contract year. But no. It actually was a contract year, but still lousy.
I'm a little bit curious because here are kind of my thoughts on this series. I think that Boston has been fantastic. I mean, obviously Boston has been fantastic all year, but they seem like they've really started to slide a little bit over the past month or so. Just kind of looking at their results recently, it seems like they've really – well, no, I guess they've won fairly consistently. It's just – I feel like they've trailed off a little bit. They haven't been nearly as consistent as they had been early in the year. And I feel like I've seen Montreal, especially since Tanguay has gotten healthy just in the past month and a half or so, their offense has really gotten a heck of a lot stronger to the point where they've been putting up, you know, 4, 5, and 6 goals a game, not always against the greatest opposition. But do you not think that there's a chance that that the Habs might be able to put something together? I mean, I know you dog on Kovalev, but he's already scored tonight, so clearly he's still got a little something in the tank.
Well, I mean, yes, they absolutely have a chance because the nucleus of a pretty decent team from last season is still there. But it's just one of those impressions that I get. Their leading scorer was Andrei Markov, and he's out. And they've had goaltending issues all year. And this is the same kid that Guy Carboneau gave up on last year in the middle of the playoffs and just burned him, just completely yanked him. And then I guess for them to win, for Montreal to win the series, I feel like issues with Boston aside, but for them to have a chance, you need Kovalev to become an impact player again. You need Carey Price to become an elite goaltender for the first time. You need Alex Tanguay, and then you need secondary scoring from somewhere, from, you know, any number of potentials. And I just don't. I just feel like Boston has more. They've got a better defense. They've been performing at a high level all season. They have two goaltenders that have been good and consistent if they need them to be. And then I don't know. I just feel like this is a Boston team that's been good from day one. They had a little bit of a blip, but at the end of the day, they're just better.
They certainly seem like, I mean, the fact that they put together the kind of season that they've had and the fact that they've walked away with the President's Trophy is – pretty darn impressive considering what this team had been going through for so long. So it's kind of hard to bet against them at this point.
And then the other series, the other series that I'm really paying attention to is the Philadelphia Pittsburgh series, which is the 4-5 matchup.
Absolutely.
And that's just because A, they played last year, which it's always nice to have a little bit of consistency. And B, it's such an interesting matchup of the kind of finesse skilled Pittsburgh Penguins versus the, you know, emerging Philly has almost been rechanneling the old Bobby Clark days lately. They've got Mike Richards, Jeff Carr, you know, they got a lot of big bodies. And this one fascinates me because I feel like this is going to be one of those series that is determined by either the Pittsburgh Penguins are going to get beaten out of the series or Philadelphia is going to, you know, kill themselves with power plays.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like for me, I feel like the biggest question mark, because I don't think that there are any doubts around Pittsburgh's ability to score. I mean, obviously they can do that. When you got Malkin and Crosby, it's not going to be too challenging to put the puck in the net. But my big question, I think, is whether or not Marc-Andre Fleury is actually going to step up and prove to be an elite goalie and a goalie that could actually take this team somewhere. I mean, he was so hyped when he came into the league, and we're, what, 4 years on from that now? And he's still young,
and he was very good last year. He came in, was overhyped. He kind of went through that natural phase for a super young goaltender, and he got overhyped for a little while, and then he kind of rebounded from being overhyped he kind of transitioned from being overhyped into thought of as a bust. And then he hung out there long enough and kind of rebounded into coming back on the rise and had a very good year last year until he got hurt and was all right in the playoffs. But, I mean, I feel like with him, there's a little bit of a Chris Osgood vibe going on. And with the Pittsburgh team in front of him, they're not going to need Marc-Andre Fleury to make, you know, 45 saves and get a shutout every night to advance in the playoffs. You know, he's got a margin of error. And he's going to have to be one of those goaltenders that makes the right save at the right time. And as far as his, you know, his past history and his mentality goes, I really trust him to do that at this stage in his career. I feel like he knows the big moments and is a good enough goaltender to know those moments. And if Pittsburgh is up, you know, 4-0, I feel like he's going to let in a goal. But if Pittsburgh is up 1-0, I feel I'm a little bit safer.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. I mean, certainly in the game last night, he was pretty outstanding. There were a couple of just phenomenal saves he had, including one rebound where he had to kind of spin 180 degrees and just barely make the stick save at the far side of the net. I mean, he definitely has the ability. I just I don't know. I'm still a little hesitant to trust him, but I think you're right. I mean, he does have a much more solid team in front of him than he has in recent years, and it's certainly hard to bet against that team the way they're playing right now. On the flip side of things, I mean, it seems like there's a big sort of up and down between Martin Biron and Etero Nidimaki for a lot of the year, and it seems like Biron kind of finally claimed the goaltending number one spot in Philadelphia. Do you think that he's really going to be capable of taking that team anywhere?
Yes, I don't know. I think he is. I feel like I have confidence in Biron. And again, I think that this is another situation where neither of these teams is built around their goaltender. I think that Biron is a little bit more under fire because Philadelphia's style of play leads to more penalties and because of the danger of the Pittsburgh power play. And so on that count, you know, yeah, they're going to be very reliant on Biron being excellent. But having said that, I feel like if this series is going to come down to Martin Biron's ability to withstand the Pittsburgh power play, then they're going to lose regardless of how good he is. I don't think there's a – short of Roberto Luongo, I don't think there's a goaltender in the playoffs that is capable of standing up to a sustained Pittsburgh, you know, power play. And so at the end of the day, if Biron is the primary factor in Philadelphia advancing or not, I feel like Philadelphia is not going to advance, and it has nothing to do with how well Biron plays. That team is going to live and die based on Mike Richards' ability to forecheck and to pressure the marquee players on Pittsburgh, Jeff Carter's ability to continue to score goals, and a bruising physical Philadelphia team's ability to keep pressure on Malkin, to get Crosby off his game, to force Pittsburgh into tense, low-scoring, aggressive-filled games rather than allowing them to skate. And that's going to be the deciding factor in this series, not goaltending. I think if Philadelphia is counting on their goaltending to pull them through, they just nobody has the weapons to do that against Pittsburgh.
Fair enough. I mean, certainly historically speaking, it's always been the case that Philly really has had to be a physical team that throws their weight around. They certainly have the bodies to do it right now. It will be interesting to me to see how Jeff Carter performs in the playoffs, because he's been really phenomenal over the course of this season. He's such an atypical center, really. I mean, he's so much more goal scoring threat and feels just much more dynamic than a lot of centers.
He's like a rec league center. Yeah, he's your absolute. He's just a shooter, which works out great with that team. And I think it's to illustrate my point, to talk about one of the other matchups. When you look at the New York Washington matchup, I think that you see that as a series where the goaltenders are going to be the big story, because in New York you've got a team that's built around Henrik Lundqvist. There's not a lot of scoring on that roster. And then in Washington you've got a team built around Alex Ovechkin and company, with a goaltender that they're essentially asking not to cost them. The only thing they're asking of Tatar is don't cost us four games.
Right.
And as we saw last night, and just to kind of contrast, whereas in Philadelphia and in Pittsburgh, they're not asking the goalies the same level of impact. And we saw last night that New York, Henrik Lundqvist was able to withstand, amongst other things, 13 shots by the league's goal scoring champion. And I think the should be MVP of the season, Alex Ovechkin. And
certainly,
then you saw Jose Theodore basically, you know, blow the game.
Yep.
I mean, to the degree that Washington is already making noise about, you know, do we have a backup we can trust? Is it time to pull the plug? And they're one game into the postseason.
Yeah, that's definitely not a situation they would be in, but they had to know what they were getting into when they signed Theodore.
Yeah, Jose Theodore. And that I think is going to be an intriguing series. I feel like Washington is going to overwhelm New York eventually. I don't think you can get away with giving Alexander Ovechkin 13 shots a night and expect to win a best-of-seven series. But, you know, they really do need Theodore not to dig them a hole. And we'll see, you know, we'll see how he does. We'll see how long Henrik Lundqvist lasts under the pressure he's going to face. And we'll see, we'll see who emerges out of that one.
Fair enough.
And then the last series in the East is the New Jersey Carolina series. And I'm not as big on this one, frankly. I think that New Jersey struggled a little bit down the stretch. I think that Brodeur's had some vulnerabilities in the playoffs the last couple of seasons. Outside of Zach Parise, I don't really see the elite level player on New Jersey. I think that Jamie Langenbrunner is quietly one of the best captains in the game. But beyond that, you know, Elias has had a nice resurgent season, but, you know, it's him, Travis Zajac, Brian Gionta, and Zach Parise. And outside,
how old is
Elias? Is in his 30s.
Yeah, but still
I mean, I do that, but I mean,
relatively early 30s. I'm thinking like 32 or 33, maybe. Could have another couple of good years in him, but he seems like he's kind of flaming out a little bit early.
Well, I mean, he had, I think, three really bad seasons coming out of the lockout, and it was a legitimate, is this guy washed up? And then he responded this year, and he had a very nice season. And I'm not saying that the guy is a hack. I'm just saying that he's, you know, he had 31 goals this year, 78 points. He's about a point a game, plus 18. Really good, you know, good quality stats. But the days that he is an elite player are gone. And
yeah.
I feel like you need more than I looking at that roster. The only player that truly scares me is Zach Parise, and I feel like you need more than that in this, especially in the Eastern Conference, when you're going to have to get through teams that can score, or you need Martin Brodeur to rediscover his early career form, which he might get because he had rest this year with the arm injury. But
right. I mean, it's always hard to get to bet against Brodeur, but I feel like the Devils were actually playing better hockey this season while Brodeur was out injured and Scott Clemenson came in. I mean, early in the season when that injury first happened, we had this conversation and effectively decided that the Devils were going to be dead in the water from that point on. And
they
I think over the course
they
of
had
the next
Kevin Weeks and Scott Clemenson.
And yet Scott Clemenson in that time won 25 games.
I know.
25 out of something like 40 games. It was a phenomenal run for them. And then Brodeur came back and he had some phenomenal outings and then he had some really just piss poor outings, quite honestly, that couldn't quite put things together. I will never bet against Brodeur in the playoffs, but the Devils just have not instilled me with a lot of confidence recently. So I have difficulty, even as good a season as they had overall, I have difficulty seeing either of these teams making it past the second round. I think the Devils are probably going to beat Carolina in this series, but I don't see either of these teams really being contenders.
See, I'm the opposite. I feel like Carolina's got just a little bit more. I think that Cam Ward had a very nice year, and I feel like Eric Staal is I feel like we're going to get something special out of Eric Staal for a little while. And I think it's going to be they're fairly well-matched teams. And at the end of the day, I think that Carolina's defense is sneaky good. And I think that we're going to see something special out of Eric Staal. And then, like you said, Drew, I don't think either of these teams really has a second-round victory in them. But I feel like Carolina has just a little bit more quality.
Yeah, that's reasonable. I mean, it will be an interesting matchup. I'm not going to be following it as closely as some of the other series just because, as I said, I don't see either of these teams really having what it takes to make it all the way to the finals, much less win the cup. But, you can't really say that neither team has the capability to put together a good run. I mean, they definitely both have very solid pieces. And when Staal is on his game, he's a fantastic player.
Yeah.
Jumping over to, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to jump over to the Western Conference, but you jumped first.
Well, for me, the most interesting matchup in the Western Conference, there are a couple of really good matchups, but for me, the most interesting one is actually Detroit and Columbus, which is the 2 seed versus the 7 seed.
The BJs.
I have been astounded at how well the Blue Jackets have played recently, and admittedly, I think that is basically all the doing of Steve Mason, who has just been outstanding in goal for them, just really out of this world. Do the Blue Jackets, I mean, they've been one of the best teams in the league over the past 15 or 20 games of the regular season. Do you think that they have a legit chance to challenge Detroit and perhaps beat Detroit in the series?
They absolutely do have an elite chance, or a great chance. And this is why I think that. First off, what is the recipe for success for a Ken Hitchcock team? You give him one true superstar offensive talent. You give him a couple of nice secondary scoring options and then an amazing goaltender. And, I mean, this is a Ken Hitchcock team. He's been there for a couple of years now. He's got his system in place. And I feel like in Rick Nash, I feel like they have an – it's a shame that they're not a little bit better offensively, but I feel like Rick Nash is one of the best players in the league. He's one of the most dangerous goal scorers. He's a big body. He is a tailor-made problem for the Nick Lindstrom type defenseman. And mm-hmm. And I feel like with Steve Mason, or sorry, is it Chris Mason? I get my Masons backwards.
It's Steve Mason is in Columbus. Chris Mason is over at St. Louis.
And I feel like he's a great kid. He's a rookie. This may be a situation where he's not experienced enough to know that he should be outmatched. I feel like RJ Umberger last year was phenomenal for Philadelphia, and if he puts in a similar performance, he could give Columbus an edge. And yeah. I feel like an unsung factor of this series, sadly, is the recession, in that Detroit has been one of the absolutely hardest hit areas, and one of Detroit's traditional huge advantages is the crowd at Joe Louis Arena, and there's some very real talk that that we're not going to start see we're not going to start seeing playoff shutouts in Detroit for a round, if not two, because the area is just has just been devastated to that extent. Whereas in Columbus, we've got a team that is, you know, it's there for the first time. The novelty value is high. And I think that I feel like Detroit deserves to be the favorite. I feel like they're a better team. I feel like they have so many weapons. They play such a devastating style of play. I feel like they should advance. But with that said, I feel like if Columbus can steal one and kind of – if Columbus can steal one and win their home games, it could be – you know, they could put a lot of pressure on this Detroit team. But with that said, this group is – Detroit is just so good. They've got
– I mean, it's hard to argue with a team that's got Lidstrom, Zetterberg, Datsyuk. I mean, it just seems like you head down the roster and – 90% of them are players who would really be considered superstars on any other team, and they just sort of all fit so well together on that Detroit team that it's hard to look past the level of talent that they have.
But I feel like this is tailor-made to be one of those crushing series where Columbus plays hard every game, almost wins a couple, but ultimately I would not be surprised if this is a sweep.
Fair enough. Well, I'm going to hope that it's not a sweep because I think it's an interesting matchup. But yeah. Do continue.
Speaking of sweeps, I feel like the San Jose series is going to be over quickly, and that is as somebody that has watched Anaheim both in the playoffs last season and as a Stars fan a lot in the Pacific Division this year. I feel like this Anaheim is the team that I would want if I was San Jose. They're going to take a ton of penalties. They're going to run at people. They're going to be fragile. They're going to do all of the stupid things Anaheim usually does. And then you throw in the fact that they can't decide on Giguere or Jonas Hiller as their goaltender. Throw in the fact that Chris Pronger has not been great this season. He's just been good, and they need him to be more than that. And I feel like they're going to give San Jose way too much time on the power play. San Jose has really – I feel the – if not the front runner for the Norris Trophy and Dan Boyle, and they're just going to eat them alive. And I feel like the issue here with San Jose is that, as always, at some point San Jose either needs to win a Stanley Cup or accept the fact that they're one of the, you know, the biggest failures of a franchise in the history of the NHL, because they should be the best team in the league. They should expect to make the Stanley Cup this season. And outside of the first round matchup, we'll see if they can make it this year, but they haven't yet.
I mean, this seems like it's a routine problem for San Jose. They consistently over the past couple of years have been a very good team during the regular season that just cannot put it together during the playoffs. And I kind of have to question. I mean, we talked with Boston about the Joe Thornton trade, and I kind of have to question if it's not a result of that. I mean, Thornton is a phenomenal player pretty much without fail during the regular season, but it seems like as soon as you get into the playoffs, he becomes completely anonymous.
Yep.
And
you can say the same thing about Patrick Marleau. He's had flashes, but the problem with San Jose is their two best players have consistently failed to push their teams past, and it's just like you're saying, whether you like it or not, it's, you know, Joe Thornton is kind of the anti Chris Osgood. There's all the statistical evidence in the world telling you he's a great player, but nothing concrete. There's nothing to show for it.
Yep, absolutely. He's if he does put it together, if he finally puts it together in the playoffs this year, San Jose will be a very, very, very tough team to beat.
Oh, if he puts it together, they'll win in a walk. If Joe Thornton and to a lesser degree Patrick Marleau can have a good postseason, then San Jose is unstoppable. They've got scoring depth, they've got size, they've got speed, they've got experience on the defense, they've got a puck mover, they've got an absolutely top-level goaltender in Evgeny Nabokov. There's no team that has a good matchup against them if their two big guys show up. But if their two big guys don't show up, then they've got nothing.
Yep.
I think that another series that's going to be over fairly quickly is Vancouver. I feel like Roberto Luongo is the best goalie in hockey. He played like it this year. He played amazing last year. He played amazing the year before that in the postseason. And I feel like in the Mats, less so, I don't think the Matt Sundin trade necessarily is the cause for this, but it's a combination of the Sundin deal and Ryan Kessler kind of emerging as a secondary scoring option that for the first time you can take the Sedins out of a game and Vancouver's going to worry you. They're no longer a one-line team. And that's all Roberto Luongo needs. He needs two lines that can score. If you can give him two or three goals, you're golden.
Yeah. Well,
and
absolutely.
I feel like San Jose, and tell me if you guys see this as well, but San Jose reminds me of the Nashville team behind Dan Ellis that just barely clawed into the playoffs a couple of years ago. And that they're St. Louis, I apologize, and that they're very hurt, and they've got a journeyman goaltender coming out of nowhere and putting them over the top.
And I agree with you completely. I don't think that I don't think that there's a heck of a lot of quality on the St. Louis team. I think that over the past month, they have really played very, very far above themselves. And you've seen David Bax, who had had a very strong start to the season, and then he had fallen off pretty dramatically. You've seen him really pop up with some essential goals. And Brad Boyes, I feel like when he's on his day, is a very good very, very effective score. I mean, that's
I feel like
hard
Brad
argue.
Boyes is one of the most underestimated goal scorers in the league. I think, but he's only if he played on a good team, he'd be. But I mean, you're right, Drew. He is.
That's streaky. Exactly. I mean, he's very streaky. Obviously, he has tons of talent, but he's very streaky. And I feel like you can neutralize pretty effectively their two main threats at St. Louis, who are Andy McDonald and Brad Boyes. And with those guys out of the picture, they really don't have much, and they're having to rely on Chris Mason. And while Chris Mason has played exceptionally well for, again, you know, the past couple of months at this point, I guess, I have a hard time seeing him as somebody who's going to be able to steal a series, which is he will steal a game or maybe two. But he's not going to steal a series.
Yeah, they're a smoke and mirrors team. And I feel like this one's going to be over quick. I feel like outside of Detroit, I feel like the team that I feel the best about in the Western Conference is Vancouver. And that's obviously that completely, as we've already discussed, that changes if San Jose shows up. But I feel like Vancouver is, they've got the best goalie in the league. They've got the Sedin twins who are made. The Sedin twins are one of the better offensive duos in the game. And then they've got a gritty lineup that can chip in timely goals, that's not going to back down physically, and that, you know, they're just too good.
Yeah, no, I think that's perfectly reasonable. I will submit humbly that this is in direct opposition to your predictions yesterday, in which you suggested that St. Louis would win the series in 7 games.
Oh, did I really?
just throwing it out there. But
wow. I feel embarrassed.
I mean here's the thing. I could see it going either way. I think that you're probably right today. I think that Vancouver has the tools to effectively neutralize St. Louis. And I think that Luongo is just going to be too much for them to overcome. But if Chris Mason is able to steal a couple of games, you know, St. Louis does have a chance. I mean, it's going to require Andy McDonald and Brad Boyes to effectively become the best players in the league, which on their day, I mean, those guys can compete with anybody, but they're going to need support from places, and I'm not sure exactly where that support can come from. So I have to think that you're probably right on the money today that Vancouver is going to take this 1 in 4 or 5.
Today. Well, I'm nothing. And then the final series is actually the one that I'm most interested in the West, just because one of my favorite teams aside from watching Marty Turco fail this season, one of the more entertaining subplots has been the emergence of a very young, very exciting Chicago Blackhawks team. And they're getting their first taste of the playoffs, Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane and company, against a Calgary team that looked great for a while and then threw away threw away the Northeast or the Northwest division, just completely choked. And now looks like they're really going to struggle. And I feel like this is going to be one of those classic series of how does a young team in Chicago that doesn't have a ton of experience handle their first, you know, their first playoff series.
I think that the one thing that Chicago really has going for them is the fact that they have depth in goal. I think that's going to be fairly decisive. I love Kiprusoff, don't get me wrong. I think that he's a fantastic goalie. But recently this entire season he hasn't really been up to par. But especially in the past 3 or 4 weeks, heading directly into the playoffs, he was very, very off his game. He wasn't getting support from his team. And I think when you match him up against Hobby Boulin and Cristobal Huue, who have both been very good on their days, I think that I feel more confident about the goaltending in Chicago. And when I look at the lineups, I think that there's plenty of scoring on both of these teams. I honestly believe that Chicago has what it takes, regardless of relative inexperience, to put this together. I think that Jonathan Toews is a very, very capable young center, and I think he's shown a lot of composure that kind of belies his age. I think that if Chris Versteeg can continue to produce like he has throughout the course of the season, and they get some goals from Andrew Ladd, who's been good over the back half of the season, and Martin Havlat.
By the way, is your superhero counterpart.
Andrew Ladd. That's pretty fantastic, actually.
It's a great superhero. And it's game.
Given his relatively small stature, I will be interested to see how Patrick Kane Patrick Kane needs to find a way as an undersized forward to continue to produce when he has to see the Dion Phaneufs of the world.
Yeah, he's the biggest question mark to me of their forwards. Obviously, he has the ability to just tear it up when he's on his game, but I don't necessarily trust at his size that he's really playoff ready. I think he's the sort of guy who, over the next couple of years, A, with some experience, B, with some solid time spent in the weight room, could be a very effective player. I mean, it's not like he's tremendously short or anything like that, but he doesn't have a lot of meat on his bones. He doesn't have much weight to throw around, and I could see him getting very, very beaten up, especially against a Calgary team that's really willing to mix it up.
But again, I think that at the end of the day, this is a Chicago team that has enough. And unless Jerome Iginla, who is one of the best players in the world, unless Jerome Iginla just takes over and puts a team on his back, Chicago should win.
Yeah, I think that's very reasonable. All right, well,
that's really all I have for the round.
All right, well, right now I feel like we've covered it pretty in-depth. But right now, one-word answer, I want your pick, or however many words it takes you. I want your pick for who's going to win the Stanley Cup. If you had to guess right now, who would you say?
I think this is the year San Jose puts it together. I think that one of Marleau or Thornton shows up, and this is the year San Jose wins.
All right. I'm going to go out on – well, I guess not that much of a limb, but I'm going to say that I think that Boston is going to be able to string together enough games that they're going to be able to take it this year. I'm keeping my fingers crossed because I like Boston.
An entirely uneducated opinion. I'm just going to take Detroit because historically, you can't
bet
lose betting on Detroit.
Excellent. I like the way you think.
Yep. That's right. Well, you know, you can't
Detroit
count the champs out.
They're a little
bit.
But
I apologize, gentlemen. I actually have to jet.
All right. Well, I think we're just about out of time anyways. I know, Carl, there was a little tidbit that you wanted to throw out on F1 in the build-up to this weekend's race at China.
Yeah, I mean, just that the diffuser trial was yesterday, and the diffusers were legal, so the standings aren't changed, the race orders aren't changed. Braun Williams and Toyota are allowed to keep what they have, and so all the other teams are now scrambling to come up with something of their own. And apparently, Renault and McLaren might have one this weekend, and Ferrari probably won't have theirs until Barcelona. Ferrari's has decided not to use KERS this weekend because struggling for a variety of reasons. So it'll be interesting to see how McLaren's and Renault's diffusers help them. I'm not convinced that the diffuser's the whole reason why Braun is fast. So I don't know. That's all I really got. It's just that, you know, Formula One spends a lot of time.
Yes, they do. Though this
and,
decision
and with prostitutes in Nazi regalia.
Right. Well, that too.
Well, which is a conclusion.
Yeah, well, that's true.
There's a court element to that.
I will say that this is a surprisingly drama-free decision from the FIA or whatever ruling body actually handed down this decision.
I think it was the International
Court. Okay, well, this is a surprisingly drama-free decision regardless. The fact that there won't be any changes in the standings, that nobody's going to be disqualified from the championship this season, et cetera, really seems to fly in the face of everything that F1 is about.
Well, and I still think we're bound to see something. There's no way they're going to let I don't know. I was going to make a joke and I forgot what it was. So yeah.
Well, that got me laughing. So
that's why it's live, folks. That's why it's live.
All right. Well, Wes, Carl, thanks for joining me as always. Have a lovely evening, everybody out there in Radio Land, and we will be back next week with
Send on the radio. don't look for us on the radio. You won't be able to tune in.
You could record it onto a cassette tape and put it into your cassette radio player, perhaps.
Well, you don't have to be that complicated. I mean, you could just use your iPod and transmitter. And the cars in the, you know, the car in the lane. Next
that is the preferred listen. Method of listening to speaking English.
Oh, definitely.
That's right. That is the speaking English, officially preferred.
That's right.
So get on that, all of you listeners out there.
Listening.
Yeah,
I can. All right, see you guys later.
Have a great night, y'all. Bye-bye.